Defense officials are anxiously waiting for what comes out of the congressional deliberations for 2017. Now, the Pentagon's acquisition chief says he's comfortable with the latest round of procurement reforms just passed by the House Armed Services Committee. That's after members relaxed language that would have required DOD to use more modular open systems. We get more now from Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu.
Congressman Mac Thornberry, the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, still wants to press DOD to separate its large platforms from the technological components that ride atop them via open systems architectures and publicly defined interfaces. But the version of the bill his committee passed 2 weeks ago orders the department to use open systems only to the maximum extent practicable, instead of mandating them for every large acquisition. Frank Kendall, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, says he was delighted by that change in particular, and he's comfortable with the acquisition reforms in the bill in general.
He did have some rigidity in earlier versions, which I'm very delighted that he took out. We've got to have some flexibility to manage specific cases. The thing that stimulated that comment was some initial language on modularity and open systems, which dictated that everything be modular and open systems. You can't always do that. I mean, the example I give is if you look under the hood of your car, which a lot of us probably don't do very often anymore, look under the hood of your car today, it is completely packed with stuff. There's no air that you can see there, basically. And they're very tightly interwoven with each other, all the different systems that exist in a modern car. If you pick up the hood of a car from the 50s, there's mostly air there. You can see around the whole motor. It's all sitting there on motor mounts. Some designs are so integrated and so dense and so constrained by things like space and weight and power considerations that you really can't do a modular, maybe even an open system. So we need flexibility on that. Modular has been part of our lexicon for decades now. We haven't always enforced it. There's resistance to it, frankly, from industry for reasons of self-interest. But we've been pushing and we've been more successful more recently. So I'm okay with the guidance as a general practice, but there are some designs where you just don't have the freedom.
Thornberry made the change after having released a public discussion draft of his acquisition reform proposals a full month before the committee began deliberating on them. And Kendall says he and his staff work closely with Thornberry and his staff via several meetings leading up to the markup of this year's defense bill. On the other hand, the relationship between the Pentagon and the Senate Armed Services Committee has been less collaborative. That panel, led by Senator John McCain, is marking up its version of the defense bill this week, and it's also expected to include acquisition reforms.
Well, I don't know what the Senate's going to do. Okay, we've had some conversations at the staff level, and we're just waiting to see what comes out of this ask this time.
But Kendall, a 30-year veteran of defense acquisition, says attitudes on Capitol Hill toward procurement reform tend to operate in cycles. And as a general matter, the current trend appears to be toward less government oversight and more latitude for industry.
I'm kind of sensing, despite the data that shows we're doing a lot better, a cycle right now of more of a laissez-faire kind of an approach. Remove the overhead and the bureaucracy and just give industry the money and let them do the job. And the idea that we can get things quickly, I call it acquisition magic. The idea that, you know, if we just relax constraints that everything will get better and we'll have much more success. We have tried that multiple times. It doesn't work. But I feel maybe a wave of that kind of thinking kind of coming through right now, and it makes me nervous.
That nervousness, he says, is informed by a series of historical analyses his office has performed in an effort to find out which policies correlate most closely with periods of cost growth in big weapon systems, and which policies seem to have helped matters. The year-to-year data is very noisy, he says, but a five-year rolling average shows a clear trend in which weapons increasingly cost more than their estimates beginning in the mid-1990s, during the last major trend away from government oversight.
And there were various versions of this, but they all had the same some things in common. There was reinventing government, which was largely about getting rid of government standards and regulation. There was transformation, which was about being much more aggressive in terms of how we did things, in terms of change. And there was total system performance, which was the idea that you give industry complete responsibility for a program from birth to death. One of the things that ran through all of those was less government oversight and management of our contractors. And you can see the results that occurred as a response to that. Things got worse for some time.
Specifically, according to DOD's figures, average cost growth during a program's development and early production phases was about 5% in 1995 and steadily rose until it reached 9% in 2010.
And then we started, in 2010, the Better Buying Power initiatives, which were about bringing cost consciousness back into the priorities of the managers for the Department of Defense. and doing a lot of things on a lot of different fronts to try to bring our contracts under control. Now, I have looked at this data a lot of different ways. I've had my team go through it because I didn't want to brief something like this unless I was pretty confident that it actually showed reality. And we have scoped it pretty carefully.
From 2010 to 2015, programs still tended to outspend their original estimates, but taken together, their average growth dropped from 9% to 3% during the better buying power era thus far. During roughly the same time frame, the department also seems to have done a much better job of beating the original cost estimates in some programs. In 2009, only 20% of the Pentagon's programs were cheaper than expected by the time they entered production. By 2014, that figure had risen to 57%. And if the objective is to rein in cost and schedule growth, Kendall says the data also strongly suggests that previous legislative fixes purporting to do that haven't made a perceptible difference. Over time, he says, congressional efforts to fix acquisition have created competing priorities for the department.
We're pulled pretty hard in the direction of go faster, take more risk, fail early, fail often and well. And why are you having that cost overrun? What's wrong with you? How could you let that happen? Right, so we get both of those. That's kind of the nature of the beast. And by the way, if we won a very serious attempt at acquisition reform, would take a clean sheet of paper and go look at the whole structure of the FAR and everything in it that governs how we're doing contracting and ask ourselves, do we really need all of this? Almost everything in there is well-intentioned, but it makes doing business with the government very different than doing commercial business. And there's a cost associated with all of that. Yeah. Again, well-intended, lots and lots of different reasons why things are in there. But that document's that thick because we keep getting additional provisions imposed by law.
As to the most recent congressional reforms, Kendall says last year's major change, giving the military service chiefs a greater role in the acquisition process, has proven to work well, at least in the early stages of its implementation.
Yeah, the chiefs have always been fairly influential, and it's been to some degree a choice as to how involved they were. But we're very happy with their increased involvement. They're the customer, okay? They're the people we're doing this for. So we want to satisfy our customers, right? And we should. And I am seeing General Milley in the Army, for example, get much more engaged on the requirements side. He's asked for some authorities, I think, in his report to the Congress at least, which go further than I would be comfortable with. But none of the other service chiefs have taken that a path.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.
Read Jared's story and share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.